Massachusetts had its largest day of fatalities from the coronavirus yesterday with 252 deaths. And overall, more than 3,400 people in Massachusetts have died. And that is a profound loss. While those numbers are gut-wrenching, they don't include people who have passed away from other causes. Every death leaves survivors who can't observe the rituals of burial and mourning in the way that we've come to expect and to need. So how do we mark the end of life now? It's a hard conversation, but we want to have it, and we want to have it with you. Have you lost someone? What are you doing to mark that loss or celebrate their life? Or are you afraid of losing someone now, given how disrupted our rituals have become? What other rituals have been disrupted for you that are just so important? Call us, talk with us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Daria Williams Fernandez joins us to have this conversation. Daria is president and director of the Floyd Williams Funeral Home in Dorchester. Welcome, Daria.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, honestly.
Also joining us is Arthur Francis Dulong III. He's the commission chairman at Pine Grove Cemetery in Lynn. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
I really am so glad to have both of you. Daria, I'll start with you. We are hearing about funeral homes being overwhelmed by this crisis. How are you? How is your staff?
Well, honestly, I think it speaks well with that introduction as being overwhelmed. I think at this point in time, funeral homes are probably seeing something that they've never seen before. You know, you could have had maybe one or 10 funerals in a month, and now we're looking at 10 a day in reference to death calls, and it's just honestly heart-wrenching. You've been working in communities and seeing people and their families growing over the years, and then you just have this fail swoop of just a large group of individuals, whether young or old or middle-aged or whatever, and it's really honestly becoming, it is depressing. You know, we're human. I mean, I know we've been funeral directors and in funeral service forever, but I think if you lose the heart and the sensitivity, what are you? You know, what is life? So I think we feel this hit. We take it home with us. I think it's a fear for my staff on a daily basis on, you know, how do I keep protecting them? I'm up on, you know, in the middle of the night looking up ways to get PPEs and things like that, because we're not able to get the resources that we need. So, yeah, it's definitely been a turn of events here.
That is gut-wrenching. Wow. Yeah. Arthur, I think everybody wonders in their head, God forbid they lose someone now. What does a burial look like? What about right now at Pine Grove Cemetery?
Well, with the virus the way it is, I mean, first and foremost, we have to protect our employees. But at the same time, you know, we're putting people, we're giving them their final resting spot. And a lot of people haven't had a chance to mourn or visit. So we're the final end, and then dictated by what's going on, we have to tell them that only a few family members can attend. And if it rains, we can't supply a tent. You know, we have to take back a lot of what we normally just gave to people, you know, in their time of need. And then we've gone from, you know, from 2-3 burials a week up to an average of 18. And of course, we're a very diversified city. You know, thank God we have a very young and free-thinking administration in here, because a lot of the rules change on the fly. You know, what is good and normal today could be changed tomorrow. You know, a lot of pressure on the employees that we have employed to, you know, inter people. And, you know, trying to keep them from being overwhelmed by it, by letting them know that, you know, they're representing an awful lot, but they're also there to comfort, you know, just by expression and just by being attentive. Each burial on a normal basis is different. You get rain, you've got hilly material, you know, you have a lot of things that are involved. And now you're asking these men to do it 12 and 18 times a day. You know, I'm sure it's stressful, but the city does well with PPE, constant reminders. And then, you know, we've got some very positive people, some good leadership. And,
good.
You know,
good.
And we're asking an awful lot from these men that do it on a day-to-day basis. But, you
Arthur,
know,
I want to.
Go ahead.
I want to jump in there because I want to invite listeners into this conversation. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Whether you've lost a loved one and are having to go through the funeral rituals and other rituals of mourning differently, whether you're worried about that. And I'm actually going to take a liberty here and also invite you to show up for and give some support to Daria, to Arthur, to their teams, and to other people who might be listening, who are providing these services, who are giving support to families in grief and loss, and messages for them to keep them going too. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We do have our first caller on the line. I'd like to bring his voice in. This is Steve calling from Bridgewater.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just calling because on March 25th, my father passed away.
I'm sorry.
And thank you. It was right at the beginning. It wasn't due to coronavirus, but the frustrating thing that happened was he was in hospice care, and I had my mother, my sisters, and I, we had 2 weeks where we weren't able to visit him because of the virus and not being able to be allowed into the nursing home. So we had, like, before he died, we had, like, 2 weeks where we weren't with him. Mm-hmm. One thing that happened recently is that, like, 2 days ago, my cat died as well.
And oh, what gosh, ended up Steve.
It's been a rough month.
Right.
But first with my father, we weren't able to have a funeral. Like, it was just my mother, my sisters, and I at the National Cemetery, 50 yards away from just watching the casket go down. And that's all we could do. We couldn't even see each other in each other's cars. We had to stay in our own cars. What ended up happening, tying in with my cat dying 2 days ago, my daughter, who's 9 years old, she broke down after our cat died, and she felt guilty because she was sadder about my cat dying because she didn't have a chance to see my father at his funeral, so she didn't have closure where we had closure with our cat.
Right.
So it
right.
was more immediate for her because she could see the cat than it was with her grandfather.
Yes, and she was able to, we were able to have like a little, we had a family ceremony for the cat. And it really kind of touched her. And that night she broke down crying, saying like, I feel bad because I didn't act the same way when my grandfather died.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve, thank you so much for your call. And
thank you.
My heart really is with you for all that loss. That's a lot. And Daria, what do you think when you hear a story like Steve's?
Well, it's honestly something that's ringing true for a lot of people right now. I think, you know, every funeral home is making their own decisions about, you know, the parameters that are already on the table, but then additionally how maybe they're over doing additional things, or maybe they're cutting out services altogether. We are trying to still keep services going, but staying with 10 people and having 2 people rotations and things like that. There's different ways of trying to do it. It's way out of the box. A lot of the times when we're talking about the traditional way of doing funeral services. I think that, you know, my condolences go out to him, obviously, for the loss of his dad. I think when he talked about prior to the time of passing, not having the days and the time to actually be with their loved one. That is something that I'm hearing every day because, you know, we're losing a lot of people within nursing homes, and if those nursing homes are closing people from outside, you know, to coming in to even visiting their loved ones. And so at the beginning of this, I saw a lot of people with dementia that we were losing because they didn't have any walking connection to a family member that kind of maybe kept them in the present. And so, you know, and as time's going on, I'm hearing more and more people of just depression in itself. I think we have to honestly understand that we were already just recognizing mental health issues, whether they were there or not before. And I think we are definitely in a situation where if we are not addressing mental health, in whether it's be the effects that of this, or definitely the, you know, this overlaying some issues that were underlying before.
The governor had a press conference today, and at it, Secretary of Health and Human Services Mary Lou Sutters talked about the fact that next month, beginning tomorrow, is Mental Health Month, and how important it is right now that we turn our attention to, you know, mental health and mental well-being. Daria, I'd love to get another call in here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. To join the conversation with your own experiences with shouts of support to people who are helping with the process of death and dying, call us and be a part of this conversation. Sharon is on the line from Cambridge. Sharon, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I feel like I'm not going to get the words out right, but I had a family member.
There's no right way, died. Sharon. It'll be okay.
my aunt died earlier this month, and it wasn't from COVID, but it's out of state. And I feel like my family, everyone's been deprived of the rituals of mourning. I can't go to the funeral. There's no, we're Jewish. There's not going to be the ritual washing of the body, and there's not going to be the Shiva and the funeral and the, and all of that just isn't happening. I don't know when we're going to see her. And then this week, my husband's friend, his 40th birthday is next month. He died in New York. And again, another funeral that I can't go to. And I don't think that either of them were particularly religious, but I feel for their families. I hate that people aren't getting the funeral is a part of it. It's recognized. Like, there's so much death that people aren't being individually recognized. And everybody's missing out. Like, they deserve it. And we need to be around people to have our own closure and mourning. And I'm just sad. And
I'm sorry, Sharon. I'm so glad you called and shared that with us. Let us at least carry that sadness with you. Arthur, I know when you talked to our producer, Zoe, you talked a lot about the great care that people are taking with the deceased and that you wanted people to know and understand that. And maybe that would give Sharon some comfort, especially given what we just heard from her.
Yeah, you know, we all know we're almost past due. Yeah, you're only going to be around for a certain amount of years. So the burial, you know, the rural burial, when it started back in the 1830s, was to make it a place to contemplate, to walk, and then to realize that you're passing on a loved one, and this will go on generation after generation. When I leave, somebody follows behind me. But we give the trust that we will always take care of your loved one. When you're not here, there will be somebody taking care of your loved one and maybe you in perpetuity. And this is something we take a lot of pride in. You know, we're only here for a short time, but the commission, the city, you know, and even the country itself realize that, you know, it's a foregone conclusion you are going to, you know, eventually die. But the trust in the knowledge that you will be taken care of, even, you know, until the very end. I mean, it's an amazing thing, the care of the flowers, how we cut the grass, how we maintain a sense of dignity, beauty, and a place where you can either celebrate or mourn your loved ones. But we know we're the end of the line as far as life goes. So,
Arthur, thank you for that. Yeah, that I think that's so important. And before I let Sharon go, Daria, are you seeing other rituals that people are coming up with for themselves, for their families, that maybe can give Sharon some comfort and something else that she can do when she can't be present in the ways she would want to for the people that she loves?
Yeah, definitely. It's been one of those things that I've been strategizing for families. It's giving a platform. You know, we've always had just honestly the ease of just having a place and that place being a place where people could wake and additionally have services. But it's got to be more than that now. It's got to be a platform where we are creating some place where people can memorialize in a different realm. And so whether it be somebody's website, and on that funeral home's website, you have make sure the obituary of that life goes up there. Make sure that their picture goes up there. Maybe not spending the expense of necessarily putting anything out in a newspaper, but maybe even using the social media aspects of things. Doing a memorial video. Like my website, we have a memorial video that you can go up and with music that you can attach to it, favorite songs and things like that. And then also, if there's an opportunity to go to graveside, go to graveside. And if the funeral home provides a live stream, let them live stream right there around graveside. So you can feel, and people are doing the responses online and things like that. I think one thing about it is, I think as funeral directors, we know that getting that opportunity to visually see and touch your loved one maybe one last time is important to some people. That's what we look at as the first step in really starting the grieving process, because the thing is, it becomes real on that day. And some people could, when we're talking about mental health, stay in denial, stay in all of the different levels of grief. And so it's one of those things where, just like she says, the closure and not being getting that opportunity, this little one recognizing the difference. It's clear that our society was not, possibly took it for granted that we did these things. It was traditional and we just did them and we did them and we did them. And now we're forcing ourselves to have to think of ways of still giving that, whether you look at a day of a memorial. Sometimes people are forced to cremation, taking those cremains and burying, getting together later on when this is calmed down a little bit, and burying those cremains in a cemetery, or additionally putting them in a niche and having a
Go ahead and finish your thought, and then I want to check back in with Sharon, but please go ahead and finish your thought.
Ceremony or something like that. And same thing around graveside. So yeah, I definitely understand her feelings at this point in time.
So Sharon, I just want to check back in with you. I'm hoping some of that might be helpful for you in just understanding how well your loved ones are being cared for now, and that there might be opportunity in the future to have some of the rituals you haven't had now.
Yeah, somebody actually did make a Facebook private group to memorialize him, and people are posting photos and sharing stories, and that actually has been helpful. Mm-hmm. It's hard when, I was his friend, but I wasn't super close, and so I feel like I'm in it, but not, in that inner circle. So I just, it's hard to know how things are going to go in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
I hope there will be a memorial that I can go to.
I hope so too. And again, our thoughts are with you. I'm glad that you called in. I wish you good care as you go through this grieving. Daria and Arthur, I want to come to, it's hard to switch to some practical pieces of conversation, but there are a couple of things I want to ask you in our remaining time. Mm. You both have talked about the practicalities of protecting workers. And Daria, you referenced, looking for protective equipment at night. Do you both feel that you have the materials and the equipment that you need for your teams to do their jobs? Arthur, I guess I'll ask you first, and then Daria, I'll come to you.
Sure.
Oh, absolutely. The powers that be, you have people in charge, Democrat Andy Hall, Lisa Nerick. Oh, yes, we asked for, and they supplied. You know, like I said, changing the rules on the fly is a pretty hard thing to do to turn. You know, we were focused on beautifying, developing, and now to being overwhelmed with burials. You know, a complete, you know, 180 and focused on it. But yes, they've been, you know, they've been great. We're not denied
Good.
Anything, even when it comes Good. To, you know, bringing people in and having them talk. Oh, yeah, I'm more than satisfied. I'm very proud
and
of
Daria?
The way that they reacted.
I'm glad. And again, I'm sorry for both of you if I'm interrupting you. It's a little hard from a distance, and I have to manage to our clock, too. Daria, in our last half a minute or so, how about you? Do you have the materials you need?
No, I think that it's a little bit different. I think when you're in the private sector of things, our distributors are kind of cut off by the federal government at this point in time. And so our ability to get these items have been actually quite difficult. Unfortunately, not having the same response. I've, you know, reached out to the different organizations. I've received some from the National Guard dropped off. Unfortunately, for a funeral home to function in its normal practice, those items would not suffice. So that is becoming quite the issue, I think, across the board. And unfortunately, we're seeing some effects of that over time.
Well, Daria Williams-Fernandez of the Floyd Williams Funeral Home and Arthur Francis Dulong III at Pine Grove Cemetery in Lynn, I want to thank you both. Thanks for being with us.